Welcome to Speak for Yourself. I'm Jason Whitlock. That is Marcellus Wadi, that dude. Coming up, we'll tell you Bill Belichick can slow down the Magic Man, Patrick Mahomes.
And if LeBron, the king, will ever be able to land a superstar teammate. But we start every day with a Whitlock, so what you got today, big dog?
Oh, I got my favorite topic, Colin Kaepernick. And we now quit comparing Colin Kaepernick to the black religious icons of the 1960s, such as Muhammad Ali, Martin Luther King Jr., and Rosa Parks. Can we stop the insanity and just accept that Kaepernick is a corporate marketing brand and not a civil rights revolutionary? Yesterday, we learned that Muhammad Ali filed to trademark his Afro image so that he can use his likeness to sell shampoo, hairspray, jewelry, and lampshades.
Man.
I'm not making that up.
You sure?
It's in the documents Kaepernick filed that he would use his likeness to sell jewelry, lampshades, and whatnot. The so-called modern-day Muhammad Ali is now a homeless man's Peyton Manning, a product pitch man for hire. Cap is a mercenary for any corporation looking for a little street credibility. For the right price, he'll raise a closed fist, take a knee, and let you ogle his fro at your next bar mitzvah, sweet 16, or baby shower. God rest Jenny Green's soul, but Cap is exactly who I thought he was, a confused child who flew too close to the sun, lost his identity as an NFL star, and used black militancy as a parachute to stop the crash. It may sound like I'm celebrating his demise. I'm not. I have a great empathy for Colin Kaepernick. In this era of intense identity politics, his complicated upbringing, he's mixed race, adopted by white suburbanites, that created natural confusion. Cap is a victim of America's leadership crisis and our unwillingness to make tough decisions and tell people the truth. We've lied to Colin Kaepernick, and those lies made it easy for him to quit football and transition to martyrdom. That's why my real disappointment is saved for the Kaepernicks, the people who insisted that Colin Kaepernick be far more than what he was capable of being, the people who misconstrue black history. How can Kaepernick be Ali or MLK without a religious platform to stand on? That's our history. That's where great black leadership has always come from. I get it. Young people think Twitter, Instagram, Snapchat, and all the other Silicon Valley rigged internet platforms are the places to incubate and grow leadership now. The church and religion are outdated. Really? Are we being serious? Do you really understand the history of black people in this country? Silicon Valley and the tech industry won't employ us or save us. Social media is primarily an amplifier of things the Silicon Valley once amplified. Social media is not a sturdy foundation of support for revolutionary change. Black Twitter is not a job at Twitter. It's clever branding that conceals the fact that it's much easier for a black person to get a job from Donald Sterling than Jack Dorsey. And that's exactly the kind of branding Colin Kaepernick will be providing lampshade, shampoo, and hairspray companies moving forward. He's already providing Nike with those services.
Believe in something, even if it means sacrificing everything.
Yep, you can continue to believe in Colin Kaepernick if you want to, but you're sacrificing common sense. All right, join us at the desk are former NFL players Brian Cox and Bucky Brooks. Marcellus, I'm going to start with you.
Yeah.
I know Brian Cox is champion at the bit, but I want to start with you. Colin Kaepernick is a corporate brand, not a revolutionary.
Wow, there's something I have to disprove in your essay. And it was such an egregious lie that... I have to go. I quote one great Jason Whitlock, religious platforms, that's our history.
Yeah.
That's where great black leadership has always come from. Let's go a little deeper into that because one Philip Randolph would disagree with that. And we all know who Philip Randolph is. And if we don't, here's the education. He's a labor organizer who actually came up with the idea on the March on Washington, who was right next to Dr. King in his I Have a Dream speech, who happened to be an atheist. There are others, W.E.B. Du Bois, founder of the NAACP, who just happened to be a free thinker, humanist, and some say atheist. Point being that you don't have to always be in this monolithic model of Christian black values to say that you are a revolutionary. Just wanted to get that out the way. Now let's talk about what you said about the branding. And
I'm gonna let you continue, but I want to talk about effective, and I get Philip Randolph, E.B. Du Bois, none of those guys have the legacy of MLK, Malcolm X, and many other, Frederick Douglass, and many others that come from the black church, but continue.
Oh, well, Frederick Douglass, Langston Hughes, Richard Wright, James Baldwin, others, free thinkers. I'm not gonna let you go there. Oh, but look, that's for thinking cap another day. Yep. What's wrong with being a brand? I don't understand this. The point of a revolution is to take the disenfranchised and make that mainstream to affect status quo. And the branding will allow him to have the money, the resources, and can affect the change of policy and legislation, which is all we asked for when he was taking a knee. When he was taking a knee, people said, stop talking, stop distracting, stop going with the awareness model, and give me action. And then the action has now turned into monetary resources, but we continue to move the goalposts against Colin Kaepernick, and I think that's unfair.
Brother, use that Ivy League education up here to educate. That's what I'm talking about.
Mm-hmm. Every other day. Every other day. Not every day.
But here's the point that I was making in thoughts in line with your thoughts on the monetary value. MLK, 30 years, 40 years later, people were selling I Have a Dream t-shirts and making money off of it. Muhammad Ali shirts 20, 30 years later. Why not him be allowed to make the money from his own name? He has no job. Nike used him and I'm sure underpaid him for the slogan because they've come out really well. I think it was up 33% the week after. So they made money.
But go ahead.
Yeah, well, they made money off of it. So he hasn't gotten the money that I'm sure Nike has made off of it. So this is a way for him to do it in the now, in the present. And it will enact change, as he said, because the man put up his own $1 million, as he said he would, to the fund. He left $20 million on the table when he opted out the deal, or $25 million on the table when he opted out the deal. So he is legitimately trying to do something, and I'm with the brother, man. I'm standing with him.
No, I think that's the big thing. You want to see action, and he did bring about action. He committed $1 million of his own money to causes. He also, what I would say, inspired others, not in terms of taking the knee, but you have seen more athletes engaged in the community, doing things, being out there. We've seen athletes have ride-alongs with police officers, guys actually getting on the ground and doing work. So regardless of whether he's come out and been opinionated and been outspoken, what he did was he led a movement of change. Athletes are more involved. And for years, athletes sat on the sideline, didn't involve themselves in the process. And we've seen more people involve themselves in the process by using their platforms to get messages out.
I think we've seen more people talking about and showing, hey, look at me, I'm involved in the process. I think athletes, and again, Bucky, I know you played in Kansas City, and you can go all the way back to the things the Chiefs organization had their players doing in the community. This has always been there. I think there has been a lot more public social media, hey, look, this is what I'm doing now, more so than players doing more. Again, I just can't believe that no one here thinks when you mix in big business and corporations, you want to stand, you want to put your Angela Davis afro on, you want to throw your black fist up in the air like you Tommy Smith, but you also want to be with every big corporation you can be, and you want to offer yourself up, your image up to hairspray companies and lampshades and all the mixing of big business is somehow, to this degree, somehow I'm a revolutionary and I'm for change. This says nothing about where he's at now, and to me, where he's always been. It's always been about his own personal brand and how he can monetize that. I just can't believe I'm sitting here and again, Ivy League educated. A lot of times, I mean, I'm just telling you, what do they teach you at those Ivy League schools about us? Because I'm just, if you leave religion out of black people, we basically disappear from this country. We're a modern miracle because of our faith. And I get there have been some atheists along the way that have rode the coattails of others. But in terms of where our leadership has come from and what it has stood on, it's always been a religious deal, and this whole little secular internet Silicon Valley movement has no substance to me, and it's not, it's always about money and it's always about surface level things and not truly challenging the establishment.
Well, the social channel, let's be respectful of the way it used to be. And it used to be a certain way, certain model to get progress. But if you alter that model, doesn't mean you can't still progress. And I think that's where we are with this.
Fair point.
And let's talk about the monetary big business alliance. It's interesting that a trademark is not just to say, I'm gonna make some money off of my likeness. It's also to protect you from those who will exploit your same likeness. So if Colin Kaepernick doesn't protect the fro, guess what? Go down Crenshaw. Go down Figueroa, and then you're gonna be like, man, where is that money going? It's certainly not going to the cause.
Colin Kaepernick didn't invent the fro.
No.
For one, and he stole it from somebody else. And then again,
he stole the fro. You stole the soul. I stole the ball head.
You don't think he put that fro on trying to convey some message about who he
was?
Oh,
I get where you're going with that. Yeah, I mean, come on. Okay. Outkast talked about
we
that.
We saw him long before when he wasn't wearing the fro, when he wasn't trying to be Mr. I'm Black Soul Brother number one. He put the fro on trying to say something to everybody about how black he was and how down he was for the cause. And the cause has been and continues to be Colin Kaepernick's personal brand, man.
So would you say the same thing about Pat Riley and Three-Pete and Phil when they were trying to do all that? Was it their personal brand? Would we criticize them the same way?
1,000%. And yes, if we want to put him in Pat Riley's three-peat lane and all of that, I get it. Because no one's calling them any kind of revolutionary leaders. No one's following it. They're businessmen. And that's what I've always believed this was about. When his business failed as a quarterback, he switched to, oh, I'm going to be this black militant who never speaks, who never puts his name on it, who doesn't have the courage of his convictions to come out and defend his position like these other people he keeps being analogized to. It's an insult to me to people to really put their names, lives, and like and everything on the line. The man won't even stand up and defend it himself.
But why?
He hides behind all the Kaepernicks and Twitter.
But why should he come out and try to explain it to people who are not willing to listen?
Because everybody else did.
But because everybody else,
you
don't
would
make
you'd
it
put your name on it.
Well, I would.
You would.
I would.
Thank you.
But he's in a position.
He's not man enough to be the same as you.
He's in a position where he can't win, because when he comes out, it becomes a black-white thing. Certain people shut him off right now and are not even trying to listen to what he say and trying to listen to his message.
Brian, that's
and so then the president goes and turns
that's
what he was
excuse,
trying to.
Brian.
But I'm just saying.
That's an excuse. Martin
at some
King
point,
and
it fall on deaf
being,
ears.
The people he's being compared to, they all did it. They all survived it. And it was.
I will say something. At some point, you would like to hear him talk, because the movement has
absolutely
gone on for 2 years. At some point, you would like him to stand in front of a microphone and say whatever it is the message is. We got the initial message and why he was taking the knee or why he was protesting the national anthem. But at some point, you would like to see him follow through and just let us know, what is it?
Bucky, I would agree with you, but when he tried to do that.
No, he never tried.
He did, and the president of the United States made it a political thing and said that you're not being patriotic, you're not standing for our flag.
Hold on,
the president don't even know the national anthem, but he criticized
this
man for,
Brian,
for kneeling for
Brian,
it.
Brian, let's deal with facts. Obama was president when he took a knee.
And what happened?
And so he
what
had
happened
every
when
opportun-
Trump took over?
Every opportunity when he started this in 2016 with Obama didn't leave office until 17, until the beginning. So he started this at the beginning of the 16th season in September. He's never come out and really defended his position and did in the few times that he tried to, wearing his Castro t-shirt, and he stumbled and messed up and sounded like a guy that wasn't really standing on much beyond Twitter.
Well can I quote the famous Giselle Bundchen, Miss Tom Brady.
Yeah.
He can't catch the ball too. And let's just be real. Like, does the quarterback have to throw it and catch the ball? Does Kaepernick have to spark change because he uses this immense platform and actually be the most well-versed on the same subject matter? Like, there are people with PhDs, as you know and I know, that live and die for the cause and the understandings and the nuances. And maybe Kaepernick is not that guy, and true strength is acknowledging weakness and knowing that I can't go that place, but I can continue to be the spark that will keep this conversation fueled.
Well put.
That's what I was trying to say.
Listen,
well
I would
I
just
work
say
with
this.
You.
If I'm gonna step out there and become this polarizing figure and this lightning rod, I damn well better sure be able to back it up And again, if he wants to come out and say, you know what, I'm not the guy really for this, which I believe he is saying. When you start saying, hey, I'm going to put my likeness on lampshades and hairspray, he's saying what you're saying. I'm not built for this. Someone else carried a ball. I'm going to go make this money. He is saying that. And that's all I want. Let's deal with him on that basis, because that's what he is. His actions.
But that's so unfair, because guess what? The whole model in which we're built on right now, being broadcasters of sports, is to criticize, to praise. Sometimes we look at a play and we're like, oh, man, how'd you mess that up? What if that same athlete said, you do it? Like, we criticize a lot of stuff, but we ain't always putting the actions behind it to say that we can do better. I'm not challenging Colin Kaepernick to be more versed in this to the point where he puts himself on the same front line with PhD scholars. All I'm saying is, if you're going to be this change spark, that's fine. And now he's using that to be an umbrella for others to get cover and now to go at it with their intelligence.
Can we quit comparing him to Muhammad Ali?
No.
Why? Muhammad Ali, would debate, defend his position. Because can we quit?
Yeah. You're living.
He's a brand.
Living in the present. When Muhammad Ali was in the present, nobody was giving him that. 30 years later, it all came.
Giving him what? He was defending his position
He defended
afraid of no one.
He defended his position, but people, the masses of people, white, black, Americans, didn't feel the same way about Muhammad Ali at the time. And all I'm saying is right now, Kaepernick, no one's feeling that way about him, but we won't recognize and realize until some time has passed.
Until that nostalgia kicks in.
The only thing about the Muhammad Ali comparison, Muhammad Ali, while he was out, he went around and he spoke high-level colleges. He talked. He was willing to talk and let his point be heard. He debated. He engaged in debate. He went back and forth. The one thing when Jason talks about Colin Kaepernick, he has never done that part of it. He's never engaged and exchanged ideas, had to defend his opinion, and go on that route.
Muhammad Ali at the time, he was doing all that. He was out, and he was defending. But was he not the most hated man in America?
He was, but he still went out.
Why would
knowing the
history of what it's going to be, why would I want to put myself and my family in that situation?
The only thing, though, if you're going to stand for something.
That's not the way you always played it.
But
the easy way out.
But I would protect my family, and it's not
important. He has no family. He's got a girlfriend.
It's not important.
He's got serious
hardcore. So you don't consider your girl family? You don't consider your girl family?
Is she the same as a wife? Is there a ring on it?
I ain't asking that. That's not what I asked.
No, I don't. Or I would put a ring on it, Brian. I hope you don't. I hope you didn't treat your girlfriends the way you treat your wife.
She was.
Yeah. We're gonna bring it back. We're gonna bring it back.
My wife was once my girlfriend, and I treated her as my wife.
I hope you treat her better now as a wife than you did as a girlfriend.
She's always treated special. That's how my mom taught me.
Oh man. Stick around later in the show. We'll give you our latest approval ratings for Colin Kaepernick.
What?
We'll see if his attempts to cash in on his activism help or hurt him.
Support for Speak for Yourself comes from our friends at Rocket Mortgage by Quicken Loans, America's premier home purchase lender. Let's talk about buying a home. It can be one of the most important purchases you'll ever make. But today's fluctuating interest rates can leave you with unexpected higher payments, which can turn a great experience into an anxious one. That's why Quicken Loans created their exclusive power buying process. Here's how it works. They check your income, assets, and credit to give you a verified approval. This gives you the strength of a cash buyer, making your offer more attractive to sellers. Once verified, you qualify for their exclusive Rate Shield approval. They'll lock in your interest rate for up to 90 days while you shop for a new home. Then once you've found the one, if rates have gone up, your rate stays the same, but if rates have gone down, you get to keep that new, lower rate. Either way, you win. It's the kind of thinking you'd expect from America's largest mortgage lender. To get started, go to rocketmortgage.com/speak. Rate Shield approval only valid on certain 30-year purchase transactions. Additional conditions or exclusions may apply. Based on Quicken Loans data in comparison to public data records, equal housing lender, licensed in all 50 states, NMLSconsumerAccess.org, number 3030.
Brian Cox and Bucky Brooks are back. Time for some big stories. Let's start in New York, where the Giants host the Eagles tonight in a showdown with huge implications in the NFC East. The 1-4 Giants are hoping to keep their season alive, but are battling some off-field drama courtesy of Odell Beckham Jr. Meanwhile, the Super Bowl champs are in a hangover mode at 2-3, and offensive lineman Lane Johnson says tonight is a must-win. Marcellus, who's the more desperate tonight, Giants or Eagles?
Oh, it's the Giants. Absolutely. You talk about a team that doesn't have a championship core to have confidence. This is this Giants bunch. Only two players on the roster even have the Super Bowl ring from the Eli Manning years. That's Eli. And shout out to an Ivy Leaguer, Zach Diassi. That's right. Brown University, we represent. Everybody else, y'all bums. Y'all didn't win a Super Bowl with the Giants. But let's talk about that confidence that comes from an Eagles team. Even if they lose to the Giants, the Eagles are sitting there saying, championship material still here. Hey, we're in a weak division. We can overcome. But if the Giants lose, they start to crumble, especially with all the heat and criticism that's coming their way and inspiration, maybe you want to call from Odell Beckham Jr. Yeah, this is must win for the Giants bunch.
Pat Shurmur in his first year, I just don't see a lot of pressure on the Giants. No expectations coming into the season. They can blame everything on Eli. If I'm the Eagles and I start off 2-4 coming off a Super Bowl and all the tall trash they talk the entire offseason, they got to start backing it up tonight or there's real problems in Philadelphia.
I would agree with you. I think when you look at the Super Bowl hangover that we talked about earlier, you're seeing that. You're seeing the offense that's a shell of itself, the defense not playing up the part, the injuries that have occurred with the team. They don't look like the same team that's won the championship. And they're getting every team that they play best effort. They're getting the best shots because they know this is a Super Bowl champ. So I'm going to pick the Eagles in this game, but no road team has won on Thursday night this season. So I look for them to beat the Giants at home.
I think the 1-4 Giants have all the pressure and the desperation. This is a must-win game for them because, you know, 1-5, you're not coming out that hole. Also, Eli Manning has all that pressure on him. People have been talking about him for 2 weeks nonstop about he is the problem. He is the issue with that offense. And I believe it's right. When you look at the weapons that they have, there's no reason why this team shouldn't be hanging 30 points on everybody. Offensive line notwithstanding, they have weapons on the outside. It is about number 10, his inability to get the ball out of his hands, his inability to push the ball down the field. He knows it, but he walks into this game with a lot of confidence.
He's done, though.
Didn't he do it last year and got benched and got the coach fired?
He did.
New York's not going to do anything to get rid of Eli. Eli's going to be there. So you have to, as
be there
the coach,
when?
This year.
Yeah,
you have to, as Pat Shurmur, you have to devise a plan to protect him. The offensive line is bad. You have to keep backs and tight ends in the chip to keep people from getting to Eli because he is afraid. He's been afraid as a quarterback. He invented the hook pass. He can throw a pass and slide on his back. He's always been afraid.
Right.
This is nothing new. But when they fired the coach last year and said, we're keeping Eli, and now we're bringing Shurmur in because he's supposed to be a guy that got cleaned up in Minnesota where he had a really good running game and the number one defense in the league, to now get him this head coaching job. This offense is not going to go unless he can keep Eli upright.
I just think Eli's done, though.
He's done.
He's done.
He's shell shocked. He's shell shocked.
He's brought him two championships. You can't throw him out the door.
But I'm saying. Oh,
yeah, he's a made man. He's a made man.
Man, he has been done
he's
since
bad.
2015.
But I'm saying this is his last season with the Giants. I think he's done. So I don't see any pressure. If Eli comes out and throws for 4,000 yards the rest of this year, I still think he's done. I think
not the future anymore.
Yeah, he's not. It's over. They have to draft a quarterback next year. That's why I just don't see any real pressure on Eli. Pat Shurmur, first-year coach. Everybody, Odell, the whole entire organization can blame everything that happens this season on Eli Manning.
But at the same time, if you're Eli Manning, you're maybe auditioning for your next opportunity if you don't retire, so there's pressure on you.
The broadcast booth? That's his next opportunity.
He doesn't have to audition for that.
Yeah.
That is Eli Manning. He's getting that job, right? And then you got to think about Odell putting all the pressure on this team. There's some individuals out there who are highly motivated to start getting
this on track. We got
to
move on. I got to multitask here. Lucene, come in and help me here. I got to get in character for our next topic. She's going to help me with my wig while I read this. To another big NFL matchup.
Oh, you stole that.
Yeah. Sunday. No, we got to put this on first. Sunday night showdown between Pat Mahomes' Chiefs and Tom Brady's Patriots. Brady took a little shot. We're good, Lucene. We got to put this on. Took a little shot at Pat Mahomes earlier this week. But Bill Belichick has had nothing but great things to say about the hot QB. who has been unstoppable this season. But the praise could just be a Belichick mind game, because since the Gillette Stadium opened in 2002, quarterbacks under the age of 25 are just 1-41 against Belichick's Patriots. The one winner, my guy Colin Kaepernick.
Yeah.
Hey. All right, Marcellus.
Yes, sir.
Do you think Belichick will humble Mahomes tonight, Sunday night?
No, not at all. If Kaepernick stole his fro, you know you stole that. I'm letting you know. You look amazing. No, he won't humble Mahomes. As Trent Dilfer always says, you can't defend a perfect pass, man. And there are more times than not he throws the perfect pass at the perfect timing, perfect anticipation into the great coverage that's set up by Andy Reid, the genius, and all these weapons. I'm just going to lay this out simply for people. Last year, this team was good, and they walked into New England week one and spanked them boys. It was 42-27. They had Alex Smith. And then they had every other weapon that they have now, except now they have Sammy Watkins. Okay, so there's a better offense on paper and a better quarterback. And you spanked this same team last year. Chances are you're going to have some success against them this year. I don't think he gets humbled.
I'm going to be quick because I want to hear from Brian. He's coached with the Patriots, or he's a Bill Belichick robot. I want to hear what you have to say. I'm nervous. I got to be honest. The numbers scream Bill Belichick is hell on young quarterbacks. And so I'm nervous and scared. Whatever happens Sunday night, Patrick Mahomes is still the best young quarterback in football.
Yes.
And he's still going to be great. But I am a little scared of Bill Belichick.
Well, to Marcellus' point, when you look at the number of points that they hung up last year, they got the same surrounding cast around Mahomes. I'm going to give some love to Eric Bieniemy, because everybody's talking about Andy Reid, but Eric Bieniemy was the running back coach that they made the offensive coordinator. Andy Reid is working more in hand with Patrick Mahomes, but Bieniemy sees the run game as well as the pass game, and he's been able to mix it up. You see him and Andy Reid having dialogue on the sideline, but you see Bieniemy making the calls. I think that he's infused a little bit more into this offense because he knows the run game as the running back coach, and they're more run-minded, but he's come up with some plays that have been outstanding. I'm saying that Kansas City's winning Sunday night.
I'm glad you gave a shout-out to Eric Bieniemy, because I was planning to do so, because he doesn't get enough credit. Everyone is talking about Andy Reid and what Andy Reid has done. Eric Bieniemy has certainly infused a level of toughness with this offense. But when you look at this matchup, speed, 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 it all goes to Kansas City, their athleticism, and they don't fear the Patriots. They've beaten the Patriots a number of times in the Andy Reid tenure. I believe the Kansas City Chiefs exposed the Patriots' lack of athleticism and speed in this matchup.
You don't think there's anything to this? I mean, Bill Belichick is dominant against quarterbacks under 25.
He is, and he does it, but he doesn't have the horses that can match up with all the speed elements. The only way I can see the Patriots doing this is if they use their offense to be their best defense, meaning they play turtle pace on offense. They control it. We've seen the last couple weeks they've been running more two-back sets, Sony Michel running the ball. They've been controlling the tempo. It reminds me of the early 2000 Patriots when they were able to just kind of slow the game down and help their defense. If they do it that way, they can keep Pat Mahomes on the sideline. But in terms of matching up defense versus Kansas City's offense, no chance.
Yeah, it's weird when you start hearing statistics and the numbers, and we've all been there where we got to play with the numbers, and you say, well, against quarterbacks under 25. But if you're a quarterback facing the Patriots under 25, it has no effect because, one, that's not me, and, two, no defense is better based on my age. Like, it's based on my performance. So I don't see too many quarterbacks under 25 that shows the same talent level, skill set, moxie as a Patrick Mahomes. So if I'm Patrick Mahomes, I'm not dissuaded by that.
There's not things Belichick can do that confuse a young quarterback.
He can do some things to confuse, but, you know, to Bucky's point, how you going to match up with Kelce? Both McCarty brothers are too slow to cover him, so you're going to have to double-team him. And then that leaves Tyreek Hill. I don't know if Sammy Watkins is going to play with the hamstring injury or whatnot, but they have speed, whether it's Conley or whoever they bring in. They got speed at all positions. If you double-team Kansas City's two best weapons, your ones or threes can't cover their other receiver and running back.
Yeah, they got Black Mamba out there, fourth receiver.
Man. Come on, man. They got something at every position.
Thank you, Brian, Bucky, and Lucy. All right, welcome back, Whitlock and Wiley. We're joined now by NBA champion Donte Jones. Let's move to Donte's best pal, LeBron James.
LeBron James.
He looked sharp last night in the Lakers preseason win over the Warriors.
Wet.
Even if the rest of the roster looked like trash.
Not all. Brendan Ingram balled.
They did not. I'm sorry. A lot has been made of the unusual cast of characters the Lakers put around James, but Kevin Love offered some insight into why it might have happened, explaining that LeBron, quote, "You have to follow. You have to learn a lot about that, playing with LeBron. You're not the top guy. You have to be resilient. I had a lot of hard nights there. There were dark times." Marcellus, will this stigma of you got to be a follower to play with James, will that hurt LeBron in terms of recruiting another superstar to play with him in L.A.?
It shouldn't. He has won a lot of people rings, even as Kevin Love admitted. And if you're a guy in a championship pursuit who is honest in his assessment of who he is, and every player in the NBA has to recognize and respect that LeBron James is the greatest basketball player. And there are some guys, and there's a certain personality type that is not attracted to where LeBron James is and what he brings to the table. And that usually is the guy who wants to go somewhere and plant the flag and say, I'm the man, and I don't want this to be a shared experience. So they mentioned a Jimmy Butler. They mentioned a Paul George. And I get it, you know, especially Paul George, a Fresno State guy who was always looking for that love and opportunity. And he was like, do I go somewhere where LeBron James is the man, or I stay here where Russell Westbrook's the man, but not the same level? So for me, it shouldn't deter anybody.
I think it's an issue because no one wants to be Scottie Pippen anymore. Everybody wants to be Michael Jordan or LeBron James. I read Kevin Love's comments, and I actually, this is what I like about LeBron James. He should impose leadership. And I have a saying that I've said for years. Great leaders recognize great leaders and fall in line and follow. That's a sign when you can follow somebody, that's a sign you're a great leader as well, because you can recognize leadership. And so when I hear guys mouth off about LeBron putting his stamp of leadership on a team, you know, I'm fine with it. But they, Kevin Love and everybody else, to Chris Bosh, to Dwayne Wade, should realize, yeah, I can fall in line behind this leadership because it's authentic.
Yeah. Winning is not for everybody. And the responsibility of winning is not for everybody. The pressure of winning is not for everybody. The pressure to perform on a nightly basis to accomplish your goal of winning a championship takes a lot, a mental toll and a physical toll, and it's a lot of responsibility. To be on a global stage every night is a lot of responsibility that most people are not ready for. And to be able to know how to lead, you must follow first. You must learn how to lead. All the smart individuals in the world do not stop learning. You take the best in your craft, you look at it, you dissect it, find out how they did it, and try to build upon it. So it's going to take a responsible, intelligent superstar a la Scottie Pippen, a guy who recognized that I'm going to get paid still, and I will be remembered forever.
Who's Pippen out there right now?
Andre Iguodala is the modern-day Scottie Pippen.
That's
because
not a superstar.
But what I'm saying is because on his free agency market, he was a superstar. He was a max player that was sought after by everybody. He got paid, but what he did, he prioritized winning. And he went there, he was a starter, and when Steve Kerr came to him and said, you know what, we will win a championship if you come off the bench and you sacrifice your numbers. And he said, you know what? You're right. And he will be remembered forever. You have a whole bunch of stars who get accolades, individual accolades, do all these things, get paid, and we may not remember them 15 years from now.
Who's the young lion that will be willing to play alongside LeBron in a junior role right now, though?
It won't be a junior role, and that's what I'm saying. You'll have the responsible superstar. It's not a junior role. It's a winning role. I'm prioritizing winning. I'm going to put my numbers to the side. We may not remember Boogie Cousins 15 years from now because of all his accolades, but we will remember Chris Bosh. We will remember Kevin Love because they're champions. They've been on that global stage, and they've won, and all kids will remember these people.
And this may be a conversation we'll have the next time we discuss this, but the question I would have is LeBron going to be that type of leader that he has been the first 14 years of his career? Is he going to be that in L.A.? Or are all the other things he's involved in out here in L.A. going to distract from that leadership, and maybe that will be an issue?
He had to learn how to lead. He wasn't always this leader. He had to learn. I think he learned something from Pat Riley. He learned from D. Wade. He learned from that culture down there, brought it to Cleveland. He's growing as a leader. He's not the same leader he was 4 years ago. And he's going to bring all his knowledge and share it. And that's what leaders should do. They should be, if you're confident in who you are and what you bring to the table, you're able to share with people. If you're not, you're going to keep it to yourself because you think you're in constant competition. But when you're on top and you can help and change people's lives and turn somebody's career around and make them better, you have no choice but to share.
All right, let's move to Minnesota, where reportedly Jimmy Butler called a players-only meeting today and explained all his problems with T-Wolves management just a day after ripping into the team's front office during yesterday's practice session, shouting at executives, quote, "You bleeping need me. You can't win without me." Amazingly, Rachel Nichols just happened to be there for a sit-down interview with Butler right after his meltdown, which he chalked up to his love of the game.
A lot of it's true. A lot of it is true. But you got to think, I haven't played basketball in so long, and I'm so passionate, and I love the game, and I don't do it for any other reason except for to compete and go up against the best to try to prove that I can hang. So all my emotion came out at one time. Was it the right way to do it? No. But I can't control that when I'm out there competing. Like, that's my love of the game. That's raw me. Me at my finest. Me at my purest. That's what you're going to get inside the lines.
All right, Marcellus, you respect what Jimmy Butler did yesterday?
Absolutely. If I'm going to ring the bell, I'm going to ring it loud. And I'm going to ring it in a way that everyone's going to know, especially those guys between the lines. And what he did was respecting between the lines what we need to do in terms of mental attributes, competitiveness, spirit, engagement. I need to see the extra effort. And he just challenged everyone and said, look, I don't care about your accolade. I don't care about your contract. Are you about this life? And he did that in Jimmy Butler's verbiage, and he did it in a way that everyone got the message. I respect it.
And then did an interview afterwards to document it that everybody knew that it happened. I like that he put names on it. He called out Towns. He called out Andrew Wiggins. He left nothing off the table. He who he has a problem with or whose effort he doesn't respect, he called it out. I respect that. Some of it feels a bit staged. I can't wait to see what plays out the rest of the season, if he gets traded or if he stays there, before I can say I fully respect what he did. But so far, so good.
Jimmy Butler's my hero right now. Like, the way he's going about this from start to finish, he said, listen, I don't like the direction of this franchise. I don't like who I'm having to compete with. We're going to have a problem. So I said, Tibbs, you know what? I have respect for you. I'm going to go in and if I'm not going to sign here. I'm going to let you get the opportunity to get some assets to build upon what you want to, but I would like to move on in a different direction. They came up with a solution, as you know, we'll trade you, and you sit out of this. Now they can't get it done. They asked him to come back to practice. He came back as a professional, and he competed, and he let his emotions show. It's an emotional game. He let his emotions out. He understands that it probably wasn't the exact or the right thing to do at the time, but it was part of how he was feeling, how he competes. I respect how he competes. I respect how he puts everything on the table, like you said. He called the guys out. He understands his market value, and he understands his value to that team. As he said, the most talented is Karl-Anthony Towns. The most athletically gifted is Wiggins.
Yeah.
But I play the hardest, and I get the most out. I get the most out for this franchise, and I affect wins. And as his numbers speak for himself, he went out there and competed, showed his dominance, and he knew it wasn't going to affect Tibbs. He knew it was going send a message that Tibbs can't send to those guys who don't compete like him.
Yeah.
Both of y'all have been in professional locker rooms. I want both of y'all to respond. Thibodeau has seemed to kind of endorse what Jimmy did. Seems to have his back. He kind of liked it, liked the passion. Any chance Jimmy Butler could go and play this year, this entire season, on that Timberwolves team and coexist with Towns and those guys?
If he gets something out of those guys. If those guys take that and learn from it. If Wiggins and Towns says, you know what, I'm here for it. I'll change because I see this is how I'm supposed to be to win. If those guys get that message, it could possibly work out because Tibbs is not able to reach them. Only the players in the locker room can reach each other. And you want a superstar that is going to take on a responsibility for your team and set the tone.
Yeah.
If you were Towns, could you play with Jimmy Butler?
Absolutely, because his challenge and everything he said was laced with competition. Everything he was saying, if I could take my ego out of it, was something to enhance even my play. Like, he's like, basically, go harder. Give me more of whatever you got. Bring it on. And coaches always are looking for enforcers. Like, their message needs to get conveyed and translated by someone on that field, on that court. And he found them in Jimmy Butler. Now, will Jimmy Butler always say what Tibbs wants? No. But I think everything he said yesterday at that practice sounds like just a guy who wants the most out of everyone.
If you ever do me that way, we done. I'll quit the show.
No, you worry.
Well, he can't challenge you to be better?
Too soft. All right, welcome back with Lock and Wiley. All right, we're joined now by NBA champion Dante Jones. As you all know, I'm a journalist, and we've got our resident Ivy Leaguer, Marcellus, here. So we're going to put on our thinking caps and take a deeper look at some big issue in sports. All right, Darnell. Darnell, nice shirt. Bring in Marcellus's cap.
Nice wrinkle shirt. What's up? Get the steamer out one time. One time.
All right, we got a Duke grad and an Ivy League grad.
Yes.
And a Ball State guy that survived, so.
All
right, let's move to the NCAA. Where the trial stemming from an FBI probe of corruption in big-time college sports continues this week. Several assistant coaches from high-level basketball programs like Arizona, Louisville, and Kansas may go to jail for cutting kids and their families in on a tiny piece of the NCAA's money machine. And yet, in an era when athletes like LeBron James, Malcolm Jennings, and many others have made big shows of their commitment to criminal justice reform, not a peep is being said about this trial, which is being used to prop up a system that exploits young athletes, particularly young black athletes, to enrich coaches and academic elites. This bothers me. I don't understand why this is the perfect example of, to me, the criminal justice system out of control. We have a system of amateurism that most of us that were involved in it and most of us that are passionate about, we've agreed amateurism has outlived its usefulness. Why is our federal government, why is our criminal justice system trying to enforce amateurism and criminalize what to me for the most part seems like a group of adults who realize, man, there's too much money to be being made to not cut the kids in some fashion, kids or family in some fashion. This, I don't understand why we're not up in arms about this.
Yeah, I share your pain. I just don't know the pragmatic approach in which we're going to challenge and put that burden on student athletes or former student athletes in the pros to say you're going to be the voice of change. Because, one, let's think about what that would look like. If LeBron James, let's use him as an example, the greatest voice in sports, it seems, right now, and he were to apply pressure on this, something that's illegal, something that's unethical, that is being committed by other adults at universities, and he applies pressure and says, this is unfair, the prosecution of those guys, and this whole situation is a scam. We all know that, but then if they were to say, okay, let's exonerate everyone and let's change the rules, the wild, wild west would ensue. Like, it would be crazier than ever until you get that exact change that you're talking about. And that's a problem. And also, what's a problem is, if you look at the situation as is, I don't feel sympathy for a guy. And I've been a guy. I wasn't a five-star, probably three-plus star, not even four-star. Had big offers, but still, not one of these guys. The minority of guys who are getting paid is such a small margin. And it's a small margin also of people who get paid and protest in the NFL, NBA, whatever it is. And to now have sympathy for a guy who made it 18 years broke, and I was one of those guys, you were too, 18 years broke. And I can't wait 1 year or 3 years or 4 years. Like, I just don't understand this whole, the climate in the home.
Coach ain't waiting.
Coach is not waiting, but you know what? I see that coming, too. And I see that, I have to respect rules as they exist and then get within to change those same rules. But I can't sit there and now take this money and then it falls back on me and say the system is corrupt.
They've convinced you that your education is your value. You didn't understand your market value as a student athlete. And they've convinced us that giving you this free education is something that you should revere and take pride in, and that is what all you should be given. But if I get an academic scholarship, I get that free education. And I don't have to go to that full-time job after I finish, which I'm mentally and physically tired from. I have demands on me. I have to travel. I cannot even do the first thing I'm there for.
Things that undermine your academic.
Exactly. It makes me inefficient on why you say I'm there for. So we have to see what's in front of us. But LeBron James has started this conversation. He executive produced the student athlete piece.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And that showed us what was in front of us. I saw some stories that I never really would ever have got a chance to see, and I have empathy for kids who are going through some real life things. One thing that stuck out when the Nick Richards part, when they brought up what his market value would be in college sports, $1.4 million right now.
Right.
You're making that much money off a child and he can't receive any of it. It's a big problem, and we would need a whole nother show to unpack this problem, but they're gonna find an answer to this problem, because
once the coaches get involved and the faces of the NCAA, of these programs, because the NCAA doesn't have a face, the coaches are the face. Once they start, once it starts trickling down to them and they maybe have scares of getting arrested, they're gonna find an answer.
Okay, let me, for clarification purposes, I agree with what you're saying in value, in essence, yes. But now we're at the point of no return in terms of there's a fence to hop, and you know it's corrupt in there, but do you hop that fence or do you play by the rules and then try to change what's behind that fence? My thought process is, I'm not going to be an athlete that takes money and then says, you know what, because I know my value. I'm not going to be that guy. And I'm also not going to be one of these adults who works for an institution who's going to exploit the same kids and then say, hey, give me a slap on the wrist because the whole system is corrupt. I'm neither one of those guys. I know it's messed up, but there are a lot of things in life that are messed up, and I got to figure a legal, ethical way to get around them.
Here's my issue, Marcellus. Here's why I'm trying to put pressure on athletes. And I hope that that documentary LeBron started was just a starting point, because I didn't think it was an effective indictment of the NCAA system, because it just scratched at the surface. But Marcellus, I just think this is an industry, football and basketball, primarily dominated by us.
Yeah.
And so by black athletes. Why aren't we trying to take care of and fix an industry that we are dominant in? We are looking at, and again, because I don't believe every Division I football or basketball player should be paid. The guys with that special value should be paid. I said it last week on this show. The guys that are, you know, mediocre talents or not real pro talent, don't bring that kind of value, should be given extra years of school so that when they're done playing, they get more time to finish school. But I would like some pressure on these college administrators, school presidents. This is their system. And this is why we don't hear criticism of it, because the media protects school presidents, the liberal elite. They have created and protect this system of exploitation.
Right.
And no one wants to call it out because it's not the right
word. Even in that documentary, they called it out. Calipari, a lot of coaches call it out. But
the documentary is a start, because it exposed and it showed real-life stories. Until we can see real-life people being affected, the media suppresses these issues, and we forget. Like, even when you asked me the question, I forgot. I don't associate the real problem until I see a real individual being hurt. And pieces like that are start to show you how these lives are being affected. And now we can create change. I think it'll resonate with somebody else and they'll speak out, or they'll look for other people who are being affected and try to create change.
I'm saying turn on the TV right now, or at least show on TV right now. There are a group of men possibly going to prison because they gave a few black kids and their parents some money.
Absolutely correct.
They're potentially going to...
And you think that's fine?
No, I don't think it's fine. I think it's crazy.
But you think it's fine to accept the money?
I don't have a... Yes, because the coaches are accepting every dime given to them. As soon as they win a few extra...
Two wrongs make the right.
No, it's
not
about
two wrongs.
Who said
it's a wrong,
though? Why is it a wrong? Okay,
it's a wrong because they're going to go to jail. So somebody, whatever
that's
you
not,
want to...
There's been plenty of laws, Marcellus,
and now
that are wrong.
And you're going to my original point. Until that law has changed, I'm going to play by these rules.
How do you change laws? By raising your hand and objecting? It's like the drug war and anything else where the laws have been used inappropriately to help the disadvantaged.
Do you want to Google protests against the NCAA? Do you want to just Google NCAA and see how much criticism comes their way every single day and every single moment? And coaches, even in the documentary, they show coaches going to the podium. We need to pay the players. I'm in agreement with you guys, but that does not excuse behavior that is self-centered and incentivized by universities of these individuals who are on trial. I thought you were saying we should exonerate these individuals.
We should exonerate them because all that they look like there. Americans to me. Capitalistic Americans to me that are sitting in a system that's creating all this money and wealth, and they can't get a piece?
So get a piece any way you can.
I'm looking at administrators who push paper all day, making seven-figure salaries and high six-figure salaries, and these kids, I'm supposed to be upset because the parent gets a job?
So you're the parent that's going to take the money, huh?
I'm gonna take it yes. and give it.
Okay,
even in the student athlete piece, right?
Not
the,
me.
The NCAA said, you know what? We give them facilities, we give them an education, we give them a breeding ground to make their talent better over this time period.
Yeah,
here.
Yeah, yeah.
The NBA does the same thing, you know that, right?
You know that, right.
And they get paid a salary, yeah, you know that, right?
Like
the G League does. No, the NBA does. After my career is done, I can get an education. I can go back and get my education. I'm going to get paid. I use facilities. Mm-hmm. You understand that on a daily basis, and they have people there to make me better.
Yeah.
So what is the difference between one getting paid and one not? And you've created this environment to make them. Even if it's something, I'm not saying the $1.4 million, but you had a value even okay. at your school. We have to equate a value for these student athletes who people are making money off of, because the small minority who are getting in trouble right now, yeah. they have some real dire like situations.
Oh, no, people, no, see, that's
people,
what I,
people, people.
That's
are,
what I wanted to
and he,
go.
And but even if your family, you were one of them too. You may have been a smaller talent, mm-hmm. but you still were broke. Your family could have received
and we
something.
And we kept waiting because we've been
because,
waiting.
You waited because that was your only option. Some people have different options.
Okay, let
you.
Me give you this in story. So, you said we got to bring a story to
I didn't
it. Here's a short story. I was at a dinner. I'm not going to say the school. I'm not going to say the individual. He was supposed to be number one talent in the country. Whatever. I'm going to the bathroom. I see these coaches I know. What's up, coach? What's up, man? What are you doing? What you up to, coach? Oh, we got one of those dinners. Really? What's one of those dinners? Oh, we got them over there. Oh, I peeked, saw the parents there and the representative. I said, oh, yeah, what they talking about? 180. And I was like, what, he's decommitting? He was like, nah, that's how much it's going to cost, 180. Now, tell me, from a broke position, I need 180 right now before my son comes to your school? And that was a couple of years ago. So I don't know where the price is right now, my but everyone's acting like it's a dire situation.
We got to end on this because we've gone long.
Okay.
You do understand there have been some laws in this country that are worthy of breaking.
Oh, absolutely.
And so I don't want to put you in an unfair spot. I just want to, because we got to wrap this up. We talked last week with Joel, or maybe it was this week, about Walter Byers, who created the modern NCAA. And then as he saw it create more and more money, he wrote in his book and he started talking about speech, analogizing it to a plantation
yeah.
and the overseers making money. And so the reason why I'm comfortable making this analogy is because the guy that created the NCAA basically compared it to slavery.
Yeah.
And so to me, this is like criticizing Harriet Tubman for freeing the slaves and right. breaking the slave laws.
Because it was a law.
Because it was a law. Some laws are worthy of breaking, and I have no respect
yeah, yeah.
for. And this amateurism thing, I don't have any respect for at all. Fox Sports has teamed up with USA Today and their social news site For the Win for the first ever Pro Football Fan Index. Last week's question was, which NFL team has the best coach? And the big winner was the Patriots head coach, Bill Belichick. This week, the question is, which NFL team has the best fans? Vote on Twitter or Instagram with the hashtag Fan Index plus the hashtag with the team name, Chiefs. For example, if you think the Eagles have the best fans, it's actually the Kansas City Chiefs. Just vote with the hashtag Fan Index and Eagles.
Or Chiefs.
All right.
Chiefs.
All right, that. It's time to put Wally on the spot and get into some of the hot button issues of the day in a segment we like to call Tell Us, Marcellus. God. Let's start in the NBA, where Lonzo Ball made his debut alongside LeBron James last night and actually wore Nikes instead of his notorious Zoe 02s. You remember those, right?
I got
those. In fact, it's been a long time since we've seen Lonzo rocking shoes from the Vars Big Baller brand. So tell us, Marcellus, is Big Baller dead?
Did you write that? Long time since we've seen Lonzo rocking yeah. some Triple B's. It's been a long time since we've seen Lonzo play. One, so don't try and go to that place. Two, it will never die as long as I'm alive because I got the Zoe 2s, I got the Mellows, I got them all, the Jellos. I buy every single one of them, don't want them comp, don't want to get it through that love relationship. I just want to purchase it because I love someone.
Do you ever wear them? Or are you like Lonzo and refuse to wear your own
No, no, no. You say, is it dead? It's not dead for this reason. Ultimately, a business only fails for one reason, runs out of money. Their model can't run out of money. It's a fulfillment model for those who are not understanding what that model means. It means if you demand, we supply. No inventory. That means we're not sitting here saying at the end of the month, oh, we're stuck with 12 Zoe 2s and 20 Mellos. We're not stuck.
We charge you based on when you place that order. The brand is not dead. Is the cachet a little tarnished?
So he's throwing CDs out of the back of the trunk, basically.
Which that's how Too Short got
started. Out the back of the trunk.
Too Short still rapping
back
right now.
The back of the trunk business.
Yeah, I think right now, look, first.
Lemonade stand.
He's done this before. He's done this before. I hate when people don't just pay attention to the particulars.
Yeah.
When he came out with the shoe, he was wearing Nike in the summer league. He came out with it a year or so ago. The point is, he gets attention for wearing other brands because people like you take the bait
right.
and say
that's
he doesn't like his brand. And if he wears his O2s all the time, it's not a story.
That's what it is. He's wearing Nikes to promote Big Baller. Got it. It makes so much sense. He's so ahead of the curve.
He is.
It's like Michael Jordan. Michael Jordan used to wear, you know, Dr. J's Converse shoes to promote Nike.
No.
Yeah, no. He's...
But he does wear those baggy jeans that's too big. and I was supposed to buy a sweatsuit because of that. You can wear some other stuff sometimes.
Big Baller is dead, man. This dude came out, we're going to take on Nike. We're going to take on Adidas. We're going to take
it
on everybody.
Time.
And his own son won't wear his own damn shoes. I mean, my God.
Will you leave him alone? You can't wear your stuff every day. Sometimes you want to switch it up. No?
Your first game of the year with LeBron James playing in Las Vegas, They had a record number of preseason viewers.
Yeah.
But I'm going to rock somebody else, Kobe shoes or somebody else.
Yeah, that was a bad day to pick.
To Dallas.
That was a bad day.
Where Cowboys receiver Allen Hurns pushed back against criticism of Dallas's much maligned receiving corps this week, saying they actually create plenty of separation, but his words were immediately read as a shot at Dak Prescott, though Hurns says he wasn't throwing anyone under the bus. But tell us, Marcellus, do you think the Cowboys players are out on Dak?
Oh, yeah, they're done.
Done?
Done. Like, the Eli Manning done, but you're younger, so we don't want to go all the way there, and you're not protected like Eli Manning, but certainly, let's decode what this means. The choice word was separation. When I hear a Dallas receiver say the word separation, I immediately think of Dez Bryant. Why did they get rid of Dez Bryant? Ultimately, because he couldn't get separation. The choice word used by Allen Hurns was, we are separating. So now excuses out the window. Who do we point at? Ezekiel Elliott is out there balling. If you look at the receiving core, who is maligned and doesn't have a number one receiver, don't put it on us. Watch the film. We are actually getting separation. You know this. Dak Prescott is too conservative in today's NFL to be a franchise quarterback. And no matter what happens in the running game, no matter what happens in the separation of receivers, Dak still won't pull the trigger. That's the problem.
You know, there's a saying in football that you know quite well. The eye in the sky don't lie.
It don't lie.
There's an eye in the sky, and there's no separation here with these wide receivers. They're trash. And Allen Hurns is the head garbage man. We all know that.
What?
And he's a little sensitive.
He caught a touchdown with no one around him in a five-mile radius.
I don't lie.
No,
Their receivers are no good. And look, are they out on Dak? I don't believe they are. I really don't. I believe he's being defensive. He keeps hearing the receivers get trashed by guys like me and others. And so he took a little shot. Hey, we getting separation. Well, there's actually a camera watching, and no, you're not. I could announce I'm 200 pounds right now, but there's a camera watching, and nobody will buy. All right, welcome back. It's that time again. It's time for Darnell Smith, our social media manager, to come here and try to coach me up on social media, get me to like social media. It's not going to happen.
Darnell, try my best.
You look awful nice in that Ball State gear, though.
Oh, well, thank you. I appreciate it.
You had 30 minutes to iron that. Come on, man.
You don't need no ironing. Dude, that's the look. Ah, man, you such a hater, Marcellus. I know I look good.
All them rivers flowing, the wrinkles. Just river wrinkles.
Man.
All right, what you got?
Anyway, we're going to start with a story you guys touched on earlier with Colin Kaepernick, who made waves yesterday when it was revealed he filed a trademark for his image and likeness. Twitter has also celebrated Kaepernick's new deal with Nike, but Darren Rovell dropped an interesting tweet about that deal yesterday. Check it out. Adidas CEO Casper Royestead tells CNBC's Sarah Eisen that company wouldn't have used Kaepernick, saying, we have a different point of view. We need to unite society, not separate society. Whitlock, you took issue to this tweet. You want to explain?
Yeah, total trash. I went and read the transcript and watched the video of what the guy actually said. This made no sense. In April, Adidas went on the record saying they'd like to sign Kaepernick. They now have a new CEO. He was on TV and did his best to praise Nike and say nothing controversial. This is completely taken out of context. That's why I trashed Darren Rovell. If you read the entire transcript, he was not critical at all. he sounded damn near jealous and envious.
Mm. Well, how does this get into taken out of context? We have a different point of view. That means whatever you thought of Kaepernick, I think different.
You got to read the whole thing in context.
We got time for that. Yeah, I mean, just look, just on premise right here, to say that you want to unite society, as Coach would say, it starts with the letter U. So you got to respect all the U's to unite. And that's going to sometimes make someone upset. And I get that. You got to take your stance. But this on its surface sounds more divisive than it sounds like it's uniting.
That's because Darren Rovell's recreating what the guy actually said. Mm. You couldn't find a more liberal. I know a lot of people at Adidas, been to a lot of their events, know a lot of their employees. You couldn't find a more liberal, progressive, pro Kaepernick environment than Adidas. This is trash.
Here it is.
Go ahead, Darnell. What's next?
Yes, sir. Moving on to something that happened at the White House today, where President Trump met with rapper Kanye West and Hall of Famer Jim Brown, and Twitter has been buzzing about it nonstop. Check out this tweet with Mike Freeman. Kanye West is a disgrace for meeting with him. A total, unmitigated disgrace. So is Jim Brown. Honestly, jokes aside, that was infuriating and sad. Y'all got any problem with Jim Brown meeting with controversial
people? I'm going to let you go first, Marcel.
I have no problem with people who may disagree meeting with them. Every athlete that has told me that they don't want to go to the White House, candidly, I talked to them. I'm like, you should have gone. You got to close the distance between those who you disagree with. Get out the echo chamber. So for this, to look at, first of all, once again, let's use this word, monolithic. We're not all the same. This whole, like, if you're black, you got to be against Trump. Can we stop with that? Like, I mean, what year are we in? What intelligence level are we at? So, look, I'm fine with this as long as they get something out of it in terms of what is their agenda.
Yeah, this isn't a pro-black stance by Mike Freeman. It's a pro-liberal stance. And sometimes we confuse liberal with blackness. Again, if you're pro-black, that's one thing. This is a disagreement over politics. Mike Freeman's doing too much. He needs a major dose of Twitter off. Too much. When people ain't comfortable at home, man, they get on Twitter and try to play real militant and real, you know, it's a disguise. It's a beard. A lot of the stuff you see on Twitter is a beard.
Hey, I got an interview with him next week. I'm going to take that can and let Mike know what's up.
Come on, Mike.
All right, Darnell, quickly, what's next?
Yeah, y'all know I watch FS1 all day long.
We heard.
And I love this clip that's been trending from yesterday's episode of The Herd. Our buddy Joel Klatt stopped by to gloat about Baker Mayfield's success. Take a listen.
This is the first jersey I've ever put on that didn't have my name on the back. Because it's Mayfield. Yeah! You know what the difference is?
What?
I never said, Darnold's undraftable. I wouldn't. That's what you said about me. Undrafted.
Yeah,
I'll take him
not,
off my board.
He didn't grab his junk. He didn't have a cop video. If Darnold was grabbing his junk and had a cop video, boom, out of here.
Guess what Mayfield has?
What?
Cop video, junk, and two wins. Bang.
Got him. Do y'all like Klatt trolling Colin here?
Oh, yeah. I do. Love I do. Because one, Colin can take it. Sometimes you got to take a shot at the king, knock him off his pedestal. I love what Joel's doing here.
Yeah, I love it too. Especially, I love the interview, not only just that one, but when Baker came on and they actually addressed it. And just to see that Colin didn't back up, he said, look, I'm going to tell you what my issues are. And they squashed that beef. And then to come and troll that beef to kind of scratch at the scab that was there, I love that, man.
Joel is very spicy. I think he wants one of our jobs. I don't think he's satisfied just
calling. I just got here. What you saying?
I know. I think he wants somebody. Any of our
check
jobs.
Check ain't even cash yet.
he's not satisfied just calling games. I think he wants one of our jobs. All right, thank you, Darnell. Today, we're talking about Colin Kaepernick, who's not even hiding the fact that he's turning his social activism into a highly profitable brand. I know this comes as a big surprise to you, Marcellus, but I'm not a fan of what he's doing.
I heard.
Not quite a dumpster fire, but he's hovering around the dumpster fire. He's a 46 total job performance, and I consider him a brand marketer now.
Not a quarterback?
Yeah, he's a brand. So I give him an 18 as a brand. All-time greatness as a brand. Look, he made something out of nothing. I'll give him an 18. Character, I'm not that high on because I think he's phony, and that's why
phony?
Authenticity zero. There is nothing authentic about Colin Kaepernick, a zero for a total of 46. Count team.
Whoa, first of all, donut? Like donut. Zero, like there's nothing real about this.
Nothing authentic
man
about
Colin gave up his own money, $1 million towards his own cause. The man has sacrificed or lost his job, whatever you want to call it.
It's all shtick.
Semantics. Guess what? The man is about this. He is putting his action behind his words. You don't get him some
pro,
points for that.
Tats, beard, all...
What?
Inauthentic.
Inauthentic? What Outkast said? Everyone with dreads ain't for the cause, and everyone with gold ain't for the falls. So guess what? It ain't about appearance. It's about what the guy is about. You are wrong with this. And he's never been in trouble before. Leave the man alone. Let me give you some real numbers right here.
I'm 10 character, but go ahead.
Let me give you some real numbers.
He's been in some trouble also, by the way.
Yeah?
Down in Miami, he was a cute, but it
went away. Oh,
It went away.
Yeah, you went down.
That was before.
Okay, yeah, that before. The fro was little then. Let's go here. Okay, so let's go to my numbers. Which I'm grading him still on the quarterback because I'm giving him a little quarterback love and brand activist love. So I kind of merged
it. 18 as a quarterback?
The dude went 16 touchdowns, 4 interceptions.
Couldn't win a game.
Yeah, bums around me, as I call it. Bums around me. All-time greatness, 15. He led a team to the Super Bowl, and I get it. For a guy who's never been to a Super Bowl or—
So did David Woodley.
Okay, well, guess what? David Woodley also wasn't the next best thing for a while, and Colin was that thing for a while. Character, I give him high character. And it's not a perfect character, but at the same time, I respect that a guy is taking this much heat and not caving, not backing away, not going away.
And not talking.
You know what? What did they say? I'm not even going to go with that cliche. Here's my last one, authenticity, 17. I do understand where you're coming from because I've known Colin Kaepernick through the phases. And, you know, if you knew him pre-protest and now, there are some questions that I think the masses want answered. I won't necessarily discuss those revelations, but it's been a process. It's been a transition. And I respect the man. You know, like Grandma said, when the Holy Ghost hits you, just run with it, you know?
That's right.
And the Holy Ghost hit him, man. Let him run.
When Nessa quit dating Alden Smith and started dating Colin Kaepernick, the Holy Ghost hit him.
I am not touching that. Wow. Who cares where inspiration comes from? You know, when you feel it and it takes over your life, I get it. I mean, you're looking at him like, is that really you? It's really him, because admit that. Even though that was a little dicey in the beginning, the guy is about his protest, his cause, our cause.
Twitter feed. He's really about
you. Got to get the message out somehow. Why not? You use Twitter more than everybody. Talking about you hate Twitter.
I'm Paul Revere trying to tell you the British are coming.